One of the biggest things that you'll ever come up against in your life is you and your career and your job, how you make money. Everything we do in our life circles around our career, particularly if you're from age 18 to 60, we've all got one thing in common. No, it's not breathing. It is we've got a career. Everything we do with our money comes from our career. Now, the world is changing. The world has changed. You will change careers. If you don't change careers, you will change jobs. There will be change. We have to get used to this dance between comfort and risk at all times. This is exactly why we've written the book, Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money, as the prequel to Sort Your Money Out. And probably by default, the prequel to Sort Your Property Out. Because if you don't have a career, you've got no money. If you've got no money, well, you can't manage money. If you don't have money that's managed well, you can't buy a property. See what we're doing here? We are making terrible intros, but you are hearing Shelley Johnson and John Pigeon today on the podcast. We're talking, I'll cut my monologue short, but we can't do today's episode without Sphere Home Loans. A major benefit of using the services of a mortgage broker is they work with you across all life stages and so many different lenders. Let's say you have a home mortgage with one lender and use another one for your first investment property. A broker can be your relationship across them both. And why would you use a separate lender for a separate property? That's to diversify risk within your entire property empire, you capitalist pigs. Okay, let's get into the episode today. We're talking about all things changing careers, changing jobs, making more money, processes, blah, 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 joined by Shelley Johnson from This Is Work, John Pigeon from This Is Property. My name's Glenn James, and this is Money.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, Shell, welcome back to the main show.
Thanks for having me.
And Johnson, welcome back. This whole episode became a thing because John was using Facebook. Once every blue moon, he uses Facebook and gets in the Facebook group. And he tagged me in a post and he was like, oh, maybe we should talk about this on the show. And you're right, John, we should, because this post in our Facebook group, so there's 52,000 people in the Facebook group, this was seen by over 25,000 people.
Wow.
So we know that it had lots of engagement. There's hundreds of comments on there. And I'm going to read the question. Then what we're going to do is talk about how we're going to unpack this episode with the help of John and Shell. And there's some bonus stuff along the way. Hakia said, question, teacher career change. I know there are currently many teachers looking to transition out of teaching. Teachers are on between $74,000 to $120,000 a year, with head teachers and deputy principals on $120,000 to $220,000, depending on the school size and years of experience. Not every teacher wants a school leadership role. Glenn, this might be a popular podcast topic. You are right. It was popular in the Facebook group. Let's hope it's not a train wreck here today. What are some industries that have positions of 100K plus with career slash income progression opportunities that value teacher skills, knowledge, and experience? Teaching has had a 10th year band cap. So unless you go into a leadership role, you are stuck there forever. Two, how do teachers learn about roles in other professions? Three, how do teachers upskill to be more competitive in other professions slash industries? Four, what services are available out there for career changes? And then other group members, feel free to weigh in. Have you made the switch? What other roles do you think are suitable with very similar wage opportunities? How can teachers make themselves more employable for other industries? Big question, basically saying, I'm a teacher. I don't like it. How do I get a job walking into 100K that I suit? Let's start with maybe some opening comments around this whole topic. Then we might each share our own career change story, and then we can get into some trouble along the way. So, John, I'll start with you. This is all your fault. You tagged me. You wanted me to talk about this on the show, and we're here now. What are your opening comments on this meaty question? And if you are interested in looking at the Facebook group, maybe just search function and search teachers or deputy or head teachers, any of those keywords, and it will come up.
Yeah. So as you said earlier, Glenn, it's got some momentum, this. So it's obviously a popular topic for many, and maybe not the whole teacher thing, but just the career change, which Shell will no doubt talk to. But I think it's just so common in the teaching profession that we're seeing disgruntled teachers that want out. And I'm surrounded by teachers. Like, I live with one. My mother and father-in-law were both teachers. My best mate that I ride with a teacher. My uni mates are teachers.
I teach you stuff all the time.
I get taught.
So you get schooled by Glenn James.
I cop all of this, the pros and cons of teaching on a daily basis, right? And it's not all horror stories. Let's just put it out there that not every teacher out there hates teaching, but because of the social presence, everyone's got an opinion and a thought and a maybe a case to vent. And as a result, we see a lot of it, and then we start to open up conversation. So I think high level, not all teaching is crappy, and I'll talk about it a little bit later, but many teachers, and I think all the teachers that I see and know, have great skill set, whether that be communication, whether it be public speaking, whether it be just general awareness of life. As a teacher, you get to grow up very quickly, 4 years of uni, and then whack, you're straight into teaching a group of 20 or 30 kids. So you do get to grow up quickly, and there's a maturity level that comes with that. So, I don't want to blabber on early, but they're my high-level thoughts.
But you did.
Yeah.
Shell, what are your high-level thoughts on this? And as John touched on, as much as this is about teachers changing careers, it's insert current career here, insert new career there. So we can kind of talk to the whole career change thing, but with a particular nod to the educators out there.
Yeah, McCrindle did this awesome research, and they said that in the last 2 years, based on their research, 2/3 of teachers said they've considered leaving the profession.
Wow.
So 66% of teachers in the last 2 years, based on their research, have said that they're looking to leave or considered leaving the profession, which tells us they're like that idea of like a mass exodus of teachers, huge social problem, like massive. And I just think if you're listening right now and you're a teacher or you're in one of these essential industries like teaching, nursing,
podcasting.
Not high up on the essential services. But I just want to say you are freaking amazing.
Yeah.
And like hats off to you, because we've done a few like career clarity calls with people who are in teaching and also nurses in these like industries that require a lot of emotional energy, huge amounts of time. And I just want to say we're so grateful to you and what you do. And also see the challenges and acknowledge the challenges inherent in those industries where they're high expectation and maybe undervalued. And so all that to say, this problem is very common. And so what do we do if we find ourselves in this thing of going, I'm one of those teachers who's considering leaving the profession, or I'm in a career right now where I've exhausted all my energy, I've put so much work into this thing over years and years, and I don't feel like it's for me anymore. What do I do? And so if you're in that spot, we're going to give you lots of tools.
And I will say on Thursday, if you're listening to this live in 2 days' time, I actually play an episode that we played on the Retire Right podcast with a 60-year-old who started his business from age 60, because I just want as many people to hear this and be encouraged. And he was an educator. And like, this is a guy now 70s, and I basically said to him on the episode, like, if there's any educators listening, like, you know, what would you tell them? And I think his view of like the whole teaching and educator landscape, there is more stringent requirements, accountability. It's not getting easier from a bureaucracy. I don't know what that term is. And but so this is someone who's their whole life as a teacher. And you know, and there's none of these people listening, but you know, like the nurses that you get and they're like retirement, post-retirement age, and they're real cranky and the system's just grinded them down. And that they didn't start like that. Like someone going into nursing or teaching usually has a really good heart, wants to help people. They're really a soft-souled person, unlike myself. But over time, the system crush, and then they end up the old nurse who's angry at everyone because the system has just crushed them.
But I also wonder with teaching, and John, like you jump into this, but is because the social narrative around teachers is, oh, teachers finish at 3 and they get all these holidays. It's like, wait, you don't see all the hours they put in lesson planning at 10 p.m. night after night after night, because like teachers do so many outside hours work that people don't see. And I wonder if that has added to this sense of they're feeling the increasing pressure and volume of work, but then people have this perspective of, well, it's like you get all these holidays, like you get 6 weeks off a year or whatever it is. And it's like, no, hang on. Like there's so many hours that are unseen that teachers are doing that they don't get appreciated or recognized for.
Yeah, totally. It's actually 12 weeks. But I think and when I first went through uni, that was like
there's non-teachers out there thinking, what's the problem? Exactly as Shell said, the social narrative.
And Amy, my wife, raised a good point the other night after this whole Facebook post went down. I was like, when mum and dad went through, as in her mum and dad went through, teachers were actually respected and they were of top high citizens in the world, right? They were just sitting there like they were respected. If you're a teacher, it was not well-to-do, but just, okay, you taught my kids and that's fantastic. Now you feel as though teachers are at the other end of the scale. Because kids and parents are almost not ganging up against teachers, but it's like they've gone down the scale in a major way. And that's incomes aside. That's just maybe it is, Shell, from the whole 12 weeks holiday, you'll be fine sort of thing. But when you think about the work conditions right now, like I mentioned 74 to 120,000, like that's standard income in Australia, right? Somewhere in that sort of bracket. When you come out of university, you're actually pretty well paid compared to the rest of the country for most roles, but it just doesn't go up in succession to be appealing for a lot of people when you work it out on a per hour rate. The other thing is this whole equal pay. Like you can work in the system for 10 years and still get paid the same amount as someone else who's been working in the system 10 years, unless you go to a higher position, which requires more work and more responsibility, right? That doesn't happen in many organisations, right, where it's not based on work ethic, it's not based on talent or leadership or anything else. It's purely based on this is the pay you're getting based on the years that you've been in the profession, which doesn't bode well when they go into the tea room and talk to another teacher who's doing bugger all on the other end in terms of homework, but they're getting the same amount of pay.
Mm. I think there's two kind of problems, and I'll step away from teachers and insert your career here. There's two problems that have become apparent here, and then they may converge on each other. So the first one is I'm doing something that I was not really passionate about or I'm no longer passionate about, okay? So all money aside, you could be paid all the money in the world, but if you don't like it, well, what are we doing here? The other side of the coin is I'm really passionate about this, but the amount of output that I've got, the amount of time that I spend, the amount of crap that I take home, the amount of after hours unpaid work, I won't say work, I'll say unpaid after hours work, the money that I'm getting, even up to 120, kind of gets this tipping point where it's like, this is lunacy, it's not worth it. And then that kind of makes you lose your passion because you're not getting looked after. And as I said in the career book, it gets to the point where if you don't want to be a head teacher or a deputy or a principal, and a principal is basically a HR coordinator at this stage, I'm pretty sure, it becomes not a job discussion, it becomes a career discussion. It's as simple as that. So we need to work out what we want to do in our career. I will say at the outset, we spent a whole chapter, and as much as this isn't an ad for our book, it's such a good resource, we spent a whole chapter talking about risk. And I'm telling you right now, in this day and age, if you want to be happy and content with your career and your life and your income, you need to get comfortable with taking some risks. Now, what do I mean by that? There needs to be a risk that this might not be my thing forever, so I have to change before I have to. There needs to be some risk where it's like, I don't like teaching, I need to step out and do something else. Now, when you step out and do something else that you're new at, guess what? As the questioner said, how do we find something that's equivalent to 100 grand? You might not walk in the door to 100 grand. It's a fact. You may need to drop back 10 or 20 grand a year to re-pivot, re-skill. And that's why we need to make sure at all times, before we even look at all this crap, you're out of consumer debt. You've got an emergency fund. You're living on less than what you earn. Because one of your plans could be, well, we need to drop down our income 20 grand a year, so I need to save some money so maybe I can fund my lifestyle while I make the change. And all this comes around to the risk thing. The advantage that I see that teachers and educators have, particularly high school and primary school, I'm not talking about university and all that, when you do want to maybe make a change, you do have the option to be casual, to go on the casual pool, which could give you, it's not going to be for everyone, but, you know, drop in, do 3 days a week casual while I try and upskill and do something over here on the side. So all that to say, Shell, do you want to talk about the story that your listener from This Is Work wrote in and told you about, just as a bit of encouragement?
Yeah. So back in 2022, a listener from our pod messaged me and asked this very question around their career. They were in teaching. They wanted to get out. They'd been in teaching for 10 years, had their master's in education, super qualified, but just felt like it's not for me. I'm burnt out. So we went on this kind of like, we had this conversation, a chat between myself and Ryan, and he's based in Canberra. And we started to work out, okay, well, what do you want to do? And he's like, I want to get out of this, but I have no idea what I want to do next. And I feel stuck. And what we started to work out is, well, what skills that you're thinking of yourself as a teacher, but teaching is made up of some really amazing skills, just like anything. If you're a nurse, it'll be the same. If you're an electrician, it'll be the same. There are meta skills. Like the micro skill of teaching might be that you, I don't know, John, tell me if I'm wrong about this, but like you have good pedagogy. Is that what people talk about as teachers?
Absolutely. You got great pedagogy.
So the micro skill is good pedagogy, but let's go up from that. Really, I don't know what the word means potentially, but I think it's about how you learn and how we educate people. So if we take the micro skill and go up a level, what is the meta skill set that you have in your role? And so for Ryan, he was an educator and is an educator. He helps people learn. So I'm like, well, you can use that skill anywhere. Like that skill and the applicability to jobs is almost endless. So let's start to think about, well, what might be a career pivot that you can make? And when we went down this process, we realized for him that learning and development in a larger corporate would be a really good career change for him. So he went from being a teacher and now, you know, fast forward a year, he lands a job in the APS, in the public service, as a learning and development specialist, doing epic work, making this amazing career move. And he has been in that role for 9 months now. And the thing for him is he needed to see his career move. And he wrote into me the other day, because I was telling him about this, and said, I needed to see the career move as a rebrand from being a teacher to being an educator. And I can be an educator and I can be someone who helps people learn in so many different contexts. And I just want to read you something he wrote to me, because this is really powerful around the expectations. Rebrand yourself as an educator. It's what you are. This appears to others as a wide variation of employee. They hear communicator, trainer, mentor, coach, progressive thinker, and it helps prospective employers to make their own mental leap about what you can do. This is far more important than your field of teaching. For instance, if you're a maths teacher, you can't compete with trained economists, but you might know enough about the subject to train economists in communication skills.
Mm.
He's made the change because he rebranded and he looked at his skills at a higher level, not at the micro level. And that's what I've been encouraging any listener to do if they're thinking about making a big career leap.
I would also say I've been looking around Seek and just particularly in Sydney lately just for different jobs. And there was a job going at a university for a project coordinator, right? Teachers are project coordinators. They coordinate all the chat and deliver it in an order and make sure they bring everyone on the journey and everything gets done.
Yeah.
Now, that project coordinator role, it didn't say you needed a degree in anything. And they were like 120. Like, that's awesome money. And it was hybrid working. So I think you're right. It comes back to if you're an educator, can you think about other words that you can either look online, LinkedIn, or Seek jobs, you know, project coordinator, educator, facilitator, corporate facilitator. And at least that could get you excited and thinking that, because all you're doing with a job, right, we've all got skills. We're just changing that skill from plonk to plonk. Plonk it from here, plonk it to there.
Very technical.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, if you take one thing away from this podcast, plonk to plonk, plonk to plonk.
Is it? That's
plonk
all you're doing. You're a ghost in a bag of chemicals that plonks your skills everywhere. That's all you are. Body, mind, and skill.
But if we get back on track for a minute, right, I think the...
John, we are so on track at the minute.
Pay aside, because not everyone just goes and says, I want to earn maximum dollars, right? They do it for enjoyment. They do it for passion. Most people that go through university that I've met that become teachers do it because they want to help, they want to make a difference, they're passionate about all of that, they have a skill set to do that, regardless of the university entrance score. But that's another conversation as to where that should land, because I think it cheapens the brand as well when the entrance score is low. But by the time they're 2, 3, 4, 5 years in the system, the conditions at which they're working in are that, I suppose, inferior to their friends and family around them that aren't in the education system, that they become burnt out. Pay is aside from all that. Like, how many occupations do you have to be on the job while you're having lunch, right, in terms of yard duty and things like that? How many occupations do you stand there and get abused by 8 or 10 kids that are 20 years younger than you and you can't do a thing about it? Right. How many occupations do you have where not only those kids abuse you, but the parents will ring up and have their own say as well, or something happens on social media? Like, there's so many conditions at which they just like, why am I actually doing this? Like, I was passionate and I did have a great skill set and I had all those things coming in, but they've just sucked all that out of me and I'm done. I'm out of here. I have to go home and spend 4 hours a night planning for the next day. The red tape in the system is just that extreme for really, I don't think, any real benefit. It's just there because it's there.
It's just amazing, isn't it? Like, I had some teachers on a couple of weeks ago when we did the low-cost dates episode, and I think the first thing I said to this teacher, I'm like, thank you for your service, because it's up there with police work. So if we go back to the questioner.
Before you go to the questioner, a policeman or woman gets a lunch break, right? They have to work majority of their lunches through because of necessity to keep up. Like, when they're on, they're actually on. They can't just say, I'll take a phone call or I'll send an email while I'm working. They have to be present with those 25, 30 kids in the room for that whole hour, and then they get two minutes break, and then the next one and then the next one, and all of a sudden it's 3:30 and the bell goes and it's like, okay, now I'll actually start my admin, and that admin might go for 4 hours.
Yeah, it's wild. So Hakia said, what are some industries that have positions of 100K plus with career/income progression, opportunities that value teacher skills, knowledge and experience? What I first want to say is, like anything, I want you to run to something, not run from something. And that could mean it could take some time. It could be that, okay, I've got a 2-year plan to get out of teaching. And all this research, gathering data, we're not taking any big life commitments. We're not going to buy 15 investment properties with my teacher wage at the moment. We are pressing pause on every major financial decision in our life while we transition this income to another role. Shell, I mentioned one earlier that was like a project coordinator type role, which had a similar income. I mean, one of the biggest things that I love to hear when people have career changes is they stay in the same industry but do a different role. So question, can you be a teacher and not like the classroom stuff and go and get a job in some type of online education digital place that's a private college and you're coordinating rosters, curriculum and all that and you're not on the tools and it's, I don't know, something different. So it's still in the teaching and education ecosystem.
Totally. You can definitely have that approach of going, okay, well, I want to change my career, but I can use the knowledge that I have that's unique to this industry and apply it in a different role and environment. That's one way to kind of slice that career move. The other way is like what we were talking about with Ryan's story of him moving from being a teacher to moving to a learning and development specialist role, which is in the HR function. So it would be under like a HR kind of team where he's using those exact same skills, but instead of teaching kids, he's teaching adults how to learn in a corporate environment. Now, I wanted to say, because he responded to these questions, I want to read you something again that he wrote, because this to me was like such an aha moment around the pay stuff, because I think pay becomes an immediate hurdle, but we need to think about the long game when it comes to pay. So when you're making a career move, right now, this person's mentioned that 74 to 120K is the ceiling. When you look at a career move, you might be looking at the start being 60K. So the start might be lower, or 65K or whatever, but the ceiling might be 250K. So we need to think about the long game with it, not the immediate hurdle. Now, yes, you're going to have stuff that you have to address and you need to make ends meet right now. But I want to share with you what Ryan said about this. So in response to the question of what are some industries that have positions of 100K with career progression that value teacher skills, he said, I think this is the wrong way around. I'd encourage people to set a floor limit to weed out potential roles or industries that won't pay you enough eventually. You may not get your standard right away, but there's a clear line to go beyond it. For instance, I set out to find a new job that would suit my skill set, but didn't go deepen a 20% pay cut with the knowledge that once I'm in there, I'd be a way up. I was surprised at how many avenues I could go down and only took an 8% pay cut, but knowing I would be back where I was soon enough. I think that shift for me is really good because it's like, yes, there might be an initial pay cut, but the long game, and now he's already getting paid more than what he was. And so I just feel like for anyone listening, this is really important, like to go, okay, short-term pain, but the payoff in the long run literally will be better.
Shell, do you remember in the career book, there's a testimony from my friend Callum who was a physio, and I don't know if it even made the book or not. I think it did. He was a physio, hated being a physio, so he went and got a job as a life insurance and income insurance claims assessor, claiming musculoskeletal in that department.
Yeah, right.
And it wasn't clinical work helping Nana after a hip operation. He was still using the same stuff, like, yeah, claim form, yeah, that's rubbish, no, that's good, yep. But get this, since we wrote that book, he got out of that because it became apparent that he was good at systems and processes, right? And now, this is so crazy, no longer in physio, no longer doing musculoskeletal claims in insurance. He's now a business analyst, change manager with one of the big four banks.
Wow.
Because just the skills build and they build. And if he wouldn't have taken that risk that we talked about to move out of the face-to-face practitioner into something that was parallel. So we're talking musculoskeletal, but I'm not helping Nana's hip. I'm helping old mate who's had an accident and on income protection. And within that insurance company helped them with their systems and processes, got a promotion, next minute went to a reinsurer, then he got out of that completely and just went into change management and all that stuff. Like, it's just fascinating. And, you know, a physio now, quote unquote, knocking on the door of 200 and something grand a year.
Oh, wow.
Where if he didn't take that risk four or 5 years ago, he wouldn't have got to where he is today.
Mm.
But it wasn't – that's fascinating that old mate said the same. It was Ryan, said the same thing. Like, Callum wasn't like, I'm not leaving physio unless I get 200 grand. He's like, no, I need to get out of here and do something else.
Yeah, and if you see it as a process, this is where we go wrong, Glenn. We think about career changes as a one-time decision, and that's why we put so much pressure on it. It's like, oh my gosh, if I stuff this one decision up, my life is over. Like, I'm ruined. But we need to see it as a process. And Callum's example, it's steps. Okay, step one, use the existing skills I have in a different way and then evaluate. Step two, and then we start to see, as you mentioned, skills build and build, and you end up in a totally different area, but it's a long game.
Mm. Do you think, Shell, with the educators, the next question that was asked was how do teachers learn about roles in other professions and how do teachers upskill in other professions or industries? Like, I'm actually not worried about upskilling in the first instance. I'm worried about what do I have now and how can I adapt that?
Mm, I agree.
Like, so for example, if someone was a professional executive assistant, right, and they didn't like that job, and I know I talk about project management, they could literally look for project management roles because an EA is managing projects every single day. So we've got to remove us from the what's my title, what do I do?
Yeah, and then further than that, what am I good at?
Yes, and what do I like?
That's right. And we talk heaps about strengths.
Mm.
And I love to know, John, because you've done your own big career change as well. Like, I feel like where people go wrong is they think about what they're passionate about instead of what their strengths are. So, like, passions, they're cool, but actually, what are you good at?
Yeah.
Because if you do what you're good at, you're going to have a higher level performance. You're going to get more opportunity.
And is that passion actually going to make me money? Is it? can I actually put a monetary value on it?
Or totally.
Am I just in the clouds?
I know I've talked about this before, but I'm passionate about fine dining. Like, I'm that into it. Like, yeah. I am a professional. I would consider myself like a professional fine diner, the amount of money I spend on that. But does that mean I should become a fine dining chef? No, because I'd be terrible at it because I would not cope with the stress of hospitality. But I like to consume that. Just because you're passionate about something doesn't mean you should make a career out of it. What you should make a career out of is the things that you're really good at. But the problem is most of us don't know what we're good at because we don't spend enough time reflecting on ourselves to go, what do I actually do well? What's my superpower? What's my genius zone?
And do you think, Shell, that we're still affected a little bit by previous generations to say, well, you've got to have loyalty, you've got to stick with it, you've got to grit your teeth, and you've, like most people now, what is it, 6 or 7 job changes over their career? Like, is there still a bit of a stigma around of I'll just stay doing what I'm doing, A, because of it's safer, and B, because of people around me?
I think there's a lot of like fear around big changes. I also think it's the sunk cost fallacy. So if we've invested, well, for Ryan, he would have spent like probably 50K on a master's degree in education. When you've invested that much money and 10 years of your life and all the tears that would come with like a career change, I would imagine, like it's a huge emotional decision to get out of something. The sunk cost of I've spent so much money on this, can I leave? I would ask you if you're in that spot right now, you're listening, you're like, I'm terrified to leave because I've sunk so much into this career. Imagine yourself in 2 years' time feeling the same way as you do right now.
Mm. Yeah,
like
what's
fast forward.
Yeah.
And then go, am I comfortable with that reality?
Mm. But I agree, and maybe we expand on that, what you mentioned, Glenn, about do I actually need to upskill in the first instance? Do I actually say, well, what are my strengths? And not necessarily my passion, but what are my strengths? What am I good at? What have people told me that I'm good at? What would I put on my resume if I was going to have a bit of a gloat and just do some exploring for a few months?
And also in concert, you know, by now, if you are after a career change, you've jumped on and ordered sort your career out and make more money. Like that whole chapter one of actually working out what your values are, like bedrock, what do you value?
Mm.
You want people, you want a team environment where I'm like, I don't want team, I don't want people, I want autonomy, money, money's a big value. Like
deserted island.
Yeah, like you've got to work out what your values are. Forget trying to upskill now.
Mm.
So my encouragement after listening today, can you take one step today? And if that is getting out a piece of paper and writing down not your title but what you actually do, that's a step. If you can work out what you value, that's a step. If you can work out what you don't want to do, that's also a good exercise. Get your ass on LinkedIn. Speak to other people in your world who have cool careers. Chat with them because there's a question here, are there services available out there for career changers? Just talk with people. How do teachers learn about roles in other professions? Talk to people.
Yeah.
It's hard when we're in the moment, but trust me, start taking some action and moving. We're going to take a quick break. Before we do, I'm going to play two recordings, one from Ash and another one from Erica about their transition story. And then I'll play one from Stephen, who has got a bit of advice as well. So we'll be back right after this.
Hi, Glenn. I just wanted to share my story about transitioning out of teaching. And mine might be a little bit different. I actually love teaching, but I actually thought I could do it more. So long story short, as an adult, I learned some skills about being grateful, empathetic, practicing self-awareness, taking ownership. And I wish I learned these skills when I was younger. And back in about 2013, the school that I was teaching at the time, in a primary school, we were looking for a wellbeing program, but we weren't really sure what to do. Now, this is before it became, I guess, a bit more popular in schools. So I just thought, well, I've learned some really important skills as an adult, and I wish I learned them when I was younger, and I just saw this opportunity. So I worked on what is now Growing with Gratitude as a side project or passion project for 2 years. So I would do a little bit in the mornings before school, a little bit after school, and some on the weekends. Now, it wasn't hours and hours. It's just short little blocks of time each day. So it was consistency over time that developed the passion project. And after 2 years, I left teaching to make Growing with Gratitude my full-time role. And it's grown ever since. In terms of finances, it's well over more than doubled, maybe triple close to what I was making as a teacher. And obviously, I've been able to invest more money and more frequently, which has been fantastic. Been able to travel around Australia. I'm based in Adelaide, but been to a lot of states and territories through the program and even overseas. So definitely that avenue can be also taken by teachers. You don't have to necessarily leave the industry. You might have a passion project or something that you can see in the education system that maybe you could solve and create a program over. And I'm actually starting a pilot program in the next week or two, helping teachers take their passion project and hopefully take to the next level as well.
G'day, Glenn. Love the show. My name's Erica. I'm 28 from Melbourne. Just like so many other people, I went to uni without actually knowing what I wanted to do because of societal pressure. After many paths, I eventually became a secondary business management and health and human development teacher and taught for almost 4 years. Sounds very cliche, but I genuinely do love working with and helping people, but I just never had that drive and passion for teaching. There's so many people in this world that are born to be teachers, and they know through primary school and high school that it's exactly what they want to do, and bloody good on them because it's a hard profession to stay in. And I think without that internal intrinsic drive, it's really, really hard to make that your long-term career. I got so much gratification seeing my students grasp hard concepts and learn new things, but really to me it was just the other side of teaching, like the amount of documentation on behavioral issues, just general disrespect for the profession, reporting, meetings. It all really took away what I liked so much about teaching, which was helping other people. And eventually it did cause me to become really burnt out. I started becoming quite bored and uninspired in the classroom too. I also taught 2 years in a lockdown, which was half of my teaching career, which didn't help the situation either. I remember one day coming home and saying, this is it. I need to make a change. I cannot do this long term. And I jumped online and researched job vacancies specifically for a company called ANZ UK, which is a teacher recruitment company. And they actually supported my teaching career when I first graduated. And I onboarded with them and did some casual relief teaching across schools in Melbourne. I remember when I went to my interview, I thought, like, these recruiters have a pretty cool job getting to interview and screen teachers all day. I did study human resource management. That was part of the business component of my degree, and learned a bit about talent acquisition as well. So I thought, why not give it a go? I called them and I discussed things like expectations, growth opportunities, what the culture's like there, pay, work-life balance, and was really happy with what I found out. In preparing for my interview, I needed to figure out ways that teaching could transfer into recruitment. And there's so many ways that teaching can transfer into recruitment or other similar industries, things like time management, people skills, problem solving, managing challenging conversations. The list is truly endless. Just write a list of your responsibilities that you do teaching, and I guarantee like every single one of those would translate into a recruitment role or something very similar. 2 years later, I am so, so happy. I could never see myself going back into teaching. I still get to help people every single day, but now I'm just helping adults achieve their goals and career aspirations rather than teachers. I never thought it would be possible to get work-life balance up until now. People still always ask if I miss the school holidays, which, yes, teaching, you do get a lot of holidays, but really, I don't. I get 5 weeks of annual leave. At the start, I was a bit concerned about that, but you really just don't feel like you need it as much as teaching. Teaching, I was feeling like I had to take so many days off just to recharge. And I did get sick quite often, but in this role, because my nervous system is regulated finally again, I really don't feel like I need to be taking all of these days off, and holidays isn't something that I'm just hanging out for. Like, I feel so inspired going into work and motivated, which is really exciting. Now, it depends how far into your teaching career you are, whether or not you'll be getting a pay cut. For me, my base salary ended up being pretty much the same as a fourth year teacher. If you were in your 10th year of teaching, obviously that would be a pay cut. But you do get bonuses quarterly for achieving your KPIs, obviously. And I have been in my role for 2 years now and have had 2 pay rises and promotions, and now I'm a senior recruiter and I am now earning more than I did as a fourth year teacher. I think it's definitely possible to get more in recruitment than teaching. There's a lot of bonuses that you can get, but be prepared to start on a lower salary, particularly if you are a really experienced teacher. I do think it will be tricky to get straight into a job where you're earning, I think the top scale for teaching is like 120K plus. It's going to be hard to get into a brand new industry with those expectations, but I think it's fair to ask about career growth and what you have to do to get to that point. Recruitment is one of those careers where you can move up the ranks quite quickly and there's a lot of potential to earn good money. But I think the best thing about recruitment is the people you get to work with, the awesome culture, provided you choose a good business to work for and good people. And there's so much career growth and opportunity. I think it's possible to get into recruitment or another industry. Just need to write a list of all of the transferable skills. Be prepared to start on a lower salary and work your way up. And like I said before, this can happen quite quickly if you're achieving your targets. So I hope this is helpful and there's light at the end of the tunnel. I remember feeling so stuck and thinking, what the hell can I do with a teaching degree other than teach? But there's so many possibilities. Just remember to really focus, hone in on the skill set that you have and how it's transferable.
Hi, this is Stephen. As an ex-teacher myself, these are the steps to get yourself into some clarity around your career change. Step one, identify what you're good at, what you do frequently, and what you have done successfully in your own job. Do you manage big projects? Do you make learning accessible for all types of learners? Do you manage stakeholder relationships? These are the types of soft skills that are useful and that will always have value in the market. Also, think about some of the hard skills that you do. Are you great with data or numbers? Are you good at creating content? Are you great at helping others? These are the hard skills. Identify where these skills are in the job market. Simply Google search jobs that manage projects, jobs that create content for learning, and you will find a raft of different jobs that pop up. Next, look them up on any job board, Seek, whatever it is, have a look and look at what they're asking for in terms of skills and responsibilities. You're not too worried about applying just yet. Next, reflect those skills and wins on your resume as best as you can, as much as they align to your skill set. If you have a deficiency in experience, then you need to get that. Whether you run a personal project of your own, whether you create something at school, this should be really reinvigorating and hopefully give you a nice little sugar hit in your current career. Even if you're feeling flat and burned out, give yourself a purpose, set yourself a priority, and create a project that'll add to your future value. For those of you that are stuck on salary, I totally understand. It's a tricky time. But what I do is I put an 18-month frame around this. So you may have less earning capacity in a new role, but make sure as part of your contract negotiations, you stipulate the value that you bring, the projects that you complete, and how you could possibly earn your way back up to that earning potential in the next 12 to 18 months. That is part of the world outside of teaching. You can negotiate your value as you're learning and developing and showing your successes on the way.
Awesome. Thanks, Ash, Erica, and Stephen for sending in some feedback. We'll be back right after this.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, we're back. Welcome to the community segment of the week. Also, everyone, the three of us haven't been on an episode together since we've done the Daily Show. That show is still in operation. It's called This Is Daily, and it's just clips from all different podcasts that John, Shell, and I host, and it's a really cool little podcast. If you just want 10-minute daily clips, This Is Daily. What's one thing you wished you'd done sooner? This is interesting. You can't be sitting here in 5 years saying, I wish I'd changed my career sooner. I want you to take action. Just as one of the testimonies, I think Stephen said, it was a 2-year plan. It's not always going to be, I'm going for job interviews on school holidays, landing a job, and I'm out of there by the end of the third term. This is a plan. We asked, what's one thing you wish you'd done sooner? Ashley said, I wish I bought a house back in 97 when I was still a fetus. Good, good one there.
Patrick, I've learned not to live with regret, but one thing I wish I had done sooner was take my finances seriously. My 20s and early 30s were littered with poor financial decisions as my mindset was always, I'll deal with it later. I would go back and slap my 25-year-old self and tell him to wake up.
Ben McConnell said, I wish I took my dinner out of the oven.
That's a good one. And did you choose that because it was shorter?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Finn said, no/get my worth.
Yeah, I'll do the long one again. Ray.
Thank you.
You'll achieve nothing if your health is compromised. Ensure you get an annual checkup with your GP with the whole battery of tests, including blood work. It could save your life. Yes, I'm shouting at everyone to get it done from my own experience.
Yeah, he did all capital that in letters. Caps. Hey, John, I got an ECG the other day.
Did you?
Yeah.
How'd it go?
And a whole heap of blood work.
Right.
All not good. A drip, baby. Not a drip.
Healthy.
Well, I'll share this at a later episode, everyone, but I got my formal ADHD diagnosis. And before I start on the Dexys, they did an ECG and a heap of blood work. So
right.
He said to the psychiatrist, was like, your score's like better than perfect.
Wow.
There you go. Is that the only time anyone's ever said that to you?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that's good. I'm happy for you.
Thanks, John. I'm happy that you're happy for me.
Mia said she had kids.
She wish she'd done it sooner.
Yeah.
What's the last one, Shell?
Steph said, protect my assets from shitty relationships.
Mm. What's one thing you wish you'd done sooner, John?
In one breath, I wished I'd have had kids sooner, but another breath I wouldn't. I think, yeah, you always wish for something else you haven't got maybe. I don't know. Nothing off the top of my head. What about you, Shell?
I wish I'd started my business sooner.
Mm.
Mm.
That's kind of like, I feel like, you know, when you have that thing, you have this inkling of something that you should do, but you keep putting it off.
Yeah, actually, I agree. I would have started what I'm doing now sooner, not podcasting, but because I didn't know what it was, but running property business for sure. What about you, Glenn? Yeah.
I'm a broken record, but I wish I'd known that mental health was an issue in my early 20s.
Mm.
That's categorically the biggest thing I wish I'd known sooner, that I was depressed and anxious and didn't know it. It's funny. I said to the psychiatrist the other day, I said, oh, I wish I had known about this 20 years ago, like when I was 18, 19. Because part of the assessment, John, I went to a neuropsychologist, did a 3-hour assessment, and then they got a copy of all my reports from year 7 till 10, and also my parents and my sister wrote a questionnaire out and answered questions. And they're like, hey, this guy's categorically off the Richter scale in terms of ADHD. And
I mean,
if you know me, everyone's like, yeah, we get it. And I said, oh, I wish I would have known about this sooner. He goes, well, kind of disagree because the hyperactivity, the impulsiveness, the risk-taking actually got you your businesses all that stuff.
Mm.
And he said, if you were medicated back when you're 18 and 19, you may have been trapped in a desk job and not taken those risks.
Stunted the growth.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I think now because I'm at a critical mass and I've built the business and my career-ish, it's just about I need the focus to maintain stuff. Mm. So, yes. Anyway, I'll do a whole episode on my journey and whatnot in due course, but a bit of housekeeping. Sort your property out and build your future. The book, it's out. Order it, get it delivered. It will change your life if you let it. Don't spend $800,000 on a flipping property without spending $28 on a book and learning one or two things that could save you 20 grand.
Yes.
It just doesn't add up. Like, read John's book. It's very practical. It's not like other property books that have just been ghostwritten by people and just spitting facts. This is strategy. This is all the stuff. This is practical experience. We don't spend 15 pages telling you what capital is and principal and interest. Sure, we mention it, but this is just practical meat.
Mm. With potatoes and a lot of other veggies.
Veggies and a little bit of dessert, if you know what I mean. Finally, if you want to come to our live shows, we're doing all around Australia, all the capital cities except Hobart, Canberra, Darwin. Sorry, we actually forgot about Canberra. We would have done it, but we forgot to plan it. Sorry. Anyway, you can get tickets in the show notes. Please, we'd appreciate if you bought the book. And I just want to make a note on the Facebook group. Thanks for reporting all the spam. Accounts get hacked. People post crap. It's really hard. We try and filter out as many people. If you've applied to go into the This Is Money Facebook group and you've been rejected, maybe put the word podcast. I heard about it on the podcast in the description. Then we know you're a listener, not about I heard it through a friend and all that stuff, because there's a lot of spam out there. So we try and keep the spam out. But some of the stuff that you do see is because people's profiles have been hacked. And the book of the month this month that we're all reading is Thanks for the Feedback for our book club. and it's by Douglas Stone and Sheila Heen. There's a link in the show notes. All right, let's get back into this topic about career changes. Shell, anything you want to add? Because you've got to go, surely.
I've got a question for Shell. How's that?
Yes.
When should we jump, Shell? When is the right time? Or is there never a right time?
I think this is a good question. When should we take the plunge? I like to look at signs more than like a definitive yes or no. So what are the signs that you might need to make a career move? It would be over an extended period of time, you're not getting any energy from what you're doing. So really, if you're in a decent career, it should give you some level of energy. That doesn't mean it's not stressful, or it doesn't mean that there aren't bad days, but it should give you a level of energy. If you're feeling continually depleted, then that's a flag. The next sign that it might be time to kind of take the plunge would be that you're not learning or growing.
Mm.
So your growth is just kind of stagnated.
I think I was, when we were walking down to that neighbor's cafe that time, Shell, for lunch recently here in New Vegas, we were talking about other stuff, and I remember writing it in the career book, but when it comes to this risk thing, right, the actual risk of something is actually the execution itself. The more planning you do, the less risk that there is. So if you took 6 months of research and you even just went for job interviews in school holidays, even if you go and just go, yeah, I'm interested in joining, here's a tip, everyone. You can go for a job interview and practice and decline to take the job. Like, you're actually allowed to do that. Do a cover letter. Get your CV tight. Apply for some roles.
Definitely what you said before about getting on LinkedIn and having a look. I think the research phase is really important, and that phase is one of the ones we try to rush through because we just want to get to the decision. But it's like, no, do your research. Do what I call a job preview. Like, when you go to the movies and you watch the previews for the movies that you want to see, do that with jobs. Like, get exposure to different roles that pique your interest and see, okay, what would the day-to-day grind of this job look like? And if I'm still interested, then that may be an avenue I go down. And like you said, I think both of you said this, you've got to talk to people. Like, you've got to get out there and talk to people and go, tell me about your worst day in this job. What does that look like? Tell me about the best day in this job.
One thing that I did when I left teaching, and granted we can't do this with all industries or if you're not full-time, et cetera, but I took 2 years leave without pay. So I knew that absolute worst case.
Rich much?
No, he was working in his other job. He wasn't just working, not doing anything.
Oh,
for
sorry.
Years.
You took. Oh, sorry. Okay.
Thank you, Shell.
You're like, I'll keep this on ice without pay and then moonlight.
That's right. He keeps his contract, but he's on leave without pay. Is that right, John?
He came on today, Shell.
Yeah. John's face when I said that just was just like.
I was like 23, mate. So to go and do that. There was always that, okay, worst case scenario, I can go be a brickies labourer or a shearer or a personal trainer or whatever, but in 2 years' time, I can come back to the same job that I left on that particular income. The income wouldn't have grown, but I know that's my worst case. And that gave me a lot of comfort. It also motivated me to think, well, I didn't want to go back there, so I'm going to make this work, whatever it is. But, yeah, that may be something that you can look into.
But that goes, John, to, you know, because it is scary to change and doing things like that. Like, let's brainstorm quickly. I'm going to do a brain dump. You guys should as well. Grab a pen and paper. I'm going to kind of say mine out loud. What are five things? We'll get Nathan to play some waiting music, okay? And we'll just take 30 seconds, play some waiting music, Nathan. We will write brain dump of things to do to minimize risk, and I want you guys to have a think about things that you can set up to minimize risk while we are doing this brain dump. So we'll just do this for 35 seconds or so. So go.
Thank you.
Thanks for the lovely music, Nathan. So remember the risk when you do change, the risk is the execution. The risk itself isn't the change. And you need to hear that. And you can actually mitigate risk. So for example, one extreme would be walking tomorrow into your work of your job, walking into the principal's office. Do you call the principal when you're a teacher the principal or my boss? Anyway, walking into the principal's office and say, I quit effective today, and you've got nothing lined up, you haven't looked at your skills, you haven't done anything, that's a very high risk thing to do. The other side of it is you get $1 million plonked into your bank account and you can quit today and money's not an issue and you can take 5 years to work out what you want to do. That's the other side, no risk, because there's no downside risk here. We've got money, life goes on, it's all good. So we don't like anything with our politics, hopefully, with our careers. We don't like to play in the extremes. It gets a little bit crazy out there. We need to bring it back into the center. So what are some things that you wrote down, Shelley, to mitigate risks before we execute?
So one of the things that I would do is to write down all the worst case scenarios and how you're going to plan for them. So in the book, we have an activity to do this. It's a really fun one. It's one you get up in the morning for, you know, I'm just going to write down all the worst things that could ever happen. The next one for me would be don't burn your bridges.
Blow them up.
So like if you can leave jobs consistently well, like John said, like it's kind of like the idea of having taking a 2-year leave without pay. But if you don't have that option, with most jobs don't have that option. So just don't burn your bridges, because you can always go back. Like people are desperate for talented employees right now. So, and then that last one for me, Glennie, would be have a couple of side gigs. Like when I started my business, that was my big career change. It was terrifying, but I had some side gigs that I knew would generate a certain amount of income where I felt like safe enough to take the step.
Yeah. John, what have you written down to mitigate risks?
Good one, Shell. Yeah, obviously I mentioned the leave without pay thing, if it's available, having cash buffers in your life, knowing what's coming in and out each month, cash flow management, industry stats. So the industry you're leaving, what are the job vacancies like to be able to return to a particular field or job role? Talk to others. You mentioned it, Shell, you're big on that. I love that. Talking to others about, okay, this particular role, if I was to go into it, what would I expect? What's my worst case in all that? If I had a partner, what's their role? What's the likelihood of them getting sacked or made redundant, whatever that might be? Stay healthy, underrated one, but just stay healthy and be appealing to any industry with the fact that you are healthy. Have insurances in your life, as many as you can, if you're depending on the role you've got. And yeah, mindset, good mindset.
Yeah, I'll finish up with the ones that I wrote. I did mention, like, you got to remove all or as many financial stresses as possible. So we don't want any consumer debt, because we don't want pressure. So we want to know how much we can live on. It might be that you get a war chest and you go, I'm going to take a 20 grand pay cut for maybe 12 months, but we've got 20 grand in savings. We are saying out loud, we are living off that 20 grand to supplement my lower income for the first 12 months. Spoiler alert, you won't need to, trust me, because you'll get in within 6 months, you'll get a pay rise, it's all good. 3, talk to people about future earnings in the new role. So if you're going out to interview, say, look, I'm happy to start at this entry-level role. I think I can deliver. Can we get some clear markers of when we can discuss role and pay going forward? So at least the risk can be reduced, because they're going to review the pay within 6 months of you being there. Another way to remove the risk, get this, is get headhunted. How do you do that? Speak to recruiters. Be active on LinkedIn. I'm an educator. Here are my skills. I'm looking for work. Get headhunted. There is nothing better in this world than being needed by someone. John kind of mentioned it. Go casual if you're starting your own business on the side, like Chris, when he started the coffee business. He opened up the cafe in the morning, got it rolling, and then went and did casual teaching 3 days a week once he started at 5 a.m. So use that casual pool to your advantage. Another way to remove the risk is actually map out a timeline and plan. By 3 months, I want to be very clear on what I want to do, what I'm good at, what type of industry I want. I've got 3 months to really work that out, whatever that is. Get a plan. Plan it out. Another mindset-y one, you know, happen to life. Don't let life happen to you. That is, have the mindset of be active with your decisions. Don't be passive. Get out there. Another one, practice your weaknesses. You might suck at one-on-one interviews. Go and practice with jobs that you don't want. Just practice. Just go and have a chat. There's no pressure here. And make sure your resume and your CV, and these are the resume and the CV stuff, it is quite tactical and it doesn't really matter, but don't have them 15 pages long. Just cut to it. Mm. Like, what do you want? What are you good at?
We have a template in the book. So if you buy the book, you get a free resume and cover letter.
I actually use that when I apply for my casual job.
And how'd you go with that?
I haven't heard back. So I'm in the middle of a career change myself, everyone.
Is that on the boat?
Yeah, I applied for a casual deckhand job on one of the tugboats. So I did a CV from the book template, did a cover letter, I've applied. And this whole thing is, this whole stage, I'm not running from podcasting, I'm running to the maritime industry. And because I have good working conditions at the moment, it's not urgent, but I'm just doing as much research as possible.
I know someone on the tuggies in Newcastle.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, well, there you go. You need to connect the, you know, that's where you build your network.
Yeah, correct. John.
Yeah.
Connect me. I want to go on the tugboat.
I got to go, but just my final remark to everyone listening. If you're wanting to make a career change, you freaking need to get on LinkedIn. I just have to say this because that's where the jobs happen.
Mm.
Seriously.
Mm.
It's where they are.
And Shell's not even paid by LinkedIn just yet. So it's where it's at. Hey, we might leave it there. Thanks for your time, Shell. Do you have any closing comments, John?
No, look, I think teachers out there, you're amazing. If you want to stay in the profession, well done. Hats off to you. Push through it. For those who want to jump ship, totally understand it. Get out there and back yourself with the skill set that you got.
And just jump when that boat is close to the dock. You want as little water gap as possible because if you trip, you'll get wet if the boat's not too close. Oh. My name's Glenn James. This is John Pigeon from This Is Property. Shell Johnson from This Is Work. Thanks so much for listening. Have a good week. We'll see you in the Facebook group, This Is Money. And if you think that this has been useful for you, who can you share this podcast with? We really want to grow the audience now. It's open to all ages and all stages and all careers. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
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 We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. If you are interested in furthering your education around money, your career, or property, we have three books that might help. Check out Sort Your Money Out, Sort Your Career Out, and Sort Your Property Out. Find these wherever good books are sold or via the link in the podcast show notes. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.